Some enchanted evening.
Some enchanted evening.
When you find your true love. When you feel her call.
The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice, and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
God is a solution. God is a 12-step.
I like where he's going here.
Helps the community grow, helps us grow. Bonnie has done a phenomenal job. And you're talking about taking people through a spiritual process, getting them into recovery.
Thanks, Monty, and thanks for all your support.
We need spirituality to make this thing work long-term.
It's an absolute pleasure. He certainly knows a lot of people.
This is one of the places that is about the business of the solution.
And now, broadcasting on location somewhere in the vast expanse of the Pacific Northwest, it's the over-opinionated 12-stepologist, the Monty Man.
That's right. And aboard one and all to another episode of the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show, brought to you by KHLT Recovery Broadcasting and many other folks. Welcome to the show, my friends. If you're watching on YouTube, how you doing? If you're on YouTube, what's happening? What are you doing? See what you miss if you don't watch on YouTube? I am telling you, you miss things like the screaming goat. Screaming goat. See? So now all of you who are listening on just audio, you're going, what the heck is he talking about? Well, you got to go to our YouTube channel. It's very simple. It's just youtube.com/@Take12Recovery Radio. There you go. Very simple. Listen, I am excited about today's show. Robert Pardon is my guest. He is known as the recovery guy. I'm going to tell you all about that. But first, I'd like to try to stump my guest if I can. Let me see if we can dig up something here.
And now, it's the quiz of the week.
That's right, everybody. It's time for Take 12 Radio's Quiz of the Week. Now, here's the Monty Man.
That's right, my friends. It's time for the Quiz of the Week, where we try to stump our guest. Now, so don't fear, friends. I'm going to give you a formal introduction of who our guest is here, but I want to try and stump him first of all, because he is called the Recovery Guy. So let's see. Let's just see how recovery guy-ish he is. Okay, so this is a little big book AA trivia. This is, and we're going to be doing this as the weeks go on, and these questions are going to get harder every week. So you're getting off easy, Robert, this time. So first of all, let me just say, welcome to Take 12 Recovery Radio, Robert.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, okay, so you ready? You ready for this? Trial by fire.
Find out.
Okay. All right, so this is quick. This is quick. All right, within seconds, you got to have the answer. Number one, what is the name of the chapter that contains the 12 steps?
Chapter 5, How It Works.
Okay, very good. You got it. Okay. Number two, what is the name of the guy that came into Bill's kitchen and talked about a solution?
Ebby.
Number three, whose opinion is given in the beginning of the big book?
Doctor's opinion.
There you go. Number four, what is the only chapter not written by Bill Wilson?
I would say it is...
Time's up. Two employers. Were you going to say that?
However, I stand corrected, and I appreciate that, and I'll never get that answer wrong again.
Number five, Dr. Bob was a real doctor. What was his area of practice?
He was a proctologist.
Yes, very good. And the last one. On the first page of Bill's story, a Hampshire Grenadier is mentioned. How did he catch his death?
Oh, by drinking too much.
Yeah, Yeah, okay, we'll give it to you. Drinking cold, small beer. Now,
yes,
I don't think it was. I don't know. What is small beer? Is that...
That's what I drank when I was getting started.
Yeah, right? It's a little tiny things.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Good job, Robert. We're going to introduce you officially right after this, folks. Don't go away. We're going to bring back Robert Park, the recovery guy. Check this out.
The primary responsibility of a sponsor is an adequate presentation of the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. And the sole purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. Both of those are Bill Wilson quotes.
This is Tom Williams.
And Alicia Martinez. And we'd like to invite you to join us every Tuesday right here at take12radio.com for the Came to Believe Recovery podcast.
Topics will include a deep look into the how and why the 12-step movement was so successful in the past and how it can experience that success again today.
You can catch up on all our episodes at take12radio.com by clicking on the Came to Believe Recovery podcast banner.
Listen, I absolutely adore this book. I have applied and implemented it in my life. I know it'll help you get unstuck if you're stuck in your recovery. That's 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, Getting Your Recovery Unstuck, by our good friend and Take 12 Recovery Radio contributor, Dr. Alan Berger. Where can you get the book? Visit his website at abphd.com, and you can receive an autographed copy. This book is also available on Amazon.
Accessing this and all of our shows has never been easier. Simply visit our website at take12radio.com and subscribe to any of the podcasting platforms listed there. Take 12 Recovery Radio, the original recovery talk and positive music radio station and podcast.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
Woo!
You can't get cherry soda, cause they've got to fill that quota. And the way things are, I'll bet they never will. They've got a zillion. Coffee in Brazil.
All right, welcome back to the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show, the world's oldest and original recovery talk and recovery music radio station and podcast. Listen, his name is Robert Pardon. He was told early on when he entered the rooms of the 12-steppers that the goal of every person who enters into the fellowship is to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. This is where the nickname of Recovery Guy was born. Robert says, while I was an alcoholic and a drug addict, I also had become a compulsive overeater who was also bulimic and a compulsive gambler. My thinking was, if I could get the gambling under control, I would drink and use less. Imagine that. My denial was deep, and I thought I drank and used because of external influences. I did not understand the cellular level on which my addiction lived. Well, now there's so much more to this story, so let's meet this week's guest. Welcome, Robert Pardon, to Take 12 Recovery Radio. What the heck do you mean by the cellular level?
Oh, Monty, it is such a great honor to be with you, and I had such a great time with Roger, and unfortunately, Roger couldn't be with us today, but boy, did we have a boy! You hooked us up so good last week.
I'm so glad. Yeah,
Roger and I spent 3 hours together, and we could have spent six, and we weren't done. So I appreciate that. Hey, before we get started, Monty, if you'll indulge me just a moment,
absolutely.
I just want to do the set aside prayer.
Let's do it.
To my recovery, God, today help me set aside everything I know about you. Everything I know about myself, everything I think I know about others, and everything I think I know about my own recovery, so I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me see the truth. And,
and I love it.
The goal, you know, that's the goal. Please help me see the truth. And, you know, Monty, you You spoke of something, and I was so fortunate when I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous back in 1986, and I just met a group of people who believed everything that was written, and they said, if you want to get well, this is what you do, and if you want to go back out, then don't do it. It was very simple. And in Las Vegas back in those days, I tell people it was like getting sober in a shark tank. Either you got devoured or you got well. Your name is Monty. Remember Monty Hall from Let's Make a Deal?
Absolutely. How can I forget?
There is no door number three. It's either treated or untreated. And we want to think there is in between. It says we thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. And there was no easier, softer way. Mm-mm. And I tried it once. And I was left in a hotel room trying to recapture that feeling of being an almost. And Monty, it just wasn't there anymore. And I had to go back.
Yeah.
To get well.
So what do you mean by cellular?
Cellular. Oh, thank you. I knew there was a question in there somewhere.
No, that's okay.
You know, on a cellular level, helps me understand my allergy from a DNA perspective. And on a cellular level is the one component of my addiction that I will never recover from. I can't go back and rescope or redefine my DNA. It is what it is.
Gotcha.
So when and like you said in your opening, so well said, I recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Because once I do drink, then it's Katie bar the door. I stand no chance. Alcohol stops me before I stop drinking alcohol. But if I can recover from that hopeless state of mind and body, as we discussed in the meeting before the meeting.
Yeah.
Step two, that insanity that says, you can have just one, you know, in spite of step one and how I look at the unmanageability of my life, somewhere along the line, I think maybe it's okay. I just celebrated 38 years of personal recovery. Some people would say, you know, gosh, you've been sober long enough, you can drink again. I just think that's the funniest thing.
Isn't it?
I wouldn't go to my gun safe and pull out a 9mm and pull the trigger and not expect to die. And I don't take a drink and not expect to die either.
So let me interject here and see if you concur with this. So, you know, the debate has been going on ever since AA had its, you know, first official meeting called AA. And it's been going on ever since then. Recovered or recovering? You know, the deal of it is, I think I like what Chris S. says. Cured means the illness is gone. Recovered means the symptoms are gone. So I'm not stealing from mom's purse anymore. I'm not going to jail anymore. I'm living free from a hopeless state of mind and body. And so the symptoms aren't there. But my physical reaction to alcohol, if I put it in my body, the symptoms are going to come back. So yes. So I've experienced a state of recovered, but it's recovered, not cured. Would you concur with that?
Oh, I think that underscores that. I think it's on page 85 or page 86, where it says, for we are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the means of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day I must take God's vision into all my activities.
Yeah.
And so I believe I am recovered because that's what it told me in the foreword to the first edition. Mm-hmm. I'm only reciting what the big book says.
Yeah, we didn't make this up.
No, this was already printed. So if you don't believe me, it's not me you're not believing. It's not Monty you're not believing.
That's right.
You're not believing the founders of a program that you say you're a member of. How ridiculous is that? You're fighting. If I wasn't recovered, Monty, I'd be fighting against myself in a battle that I can't win. Yeah. I become that dog chasing his tail. I never catch it. I just lay under the tree and I just from exhaustion.
Would you say that because I read a comment to one of the Can't Believe episodes that we did, and I don't think that we're going to address it tomorrow, but I don't think the person actually heard what we were saying. So I had made the statement that, you know, I was powerless. I'd lost the power and choice. And but now I can tap into a power, because my problem wasn't alcohol. My problem was I was powerless. So if my problem is I'm powerless, my solution is to get a power. So now I can tap into that power, but it's still not my power. It's his power, right? Yes. So left to my own devices, I'm still powerless because I don't have the power, nor do the 25 people in the complain about your day meeting, right? So, but if I can tap into that power, in a way, now I have access to a power. True?
Oh, undoubtedly. I tell people all the time in treatment centers and alike that the program that we're involved with is not designed to tell me how not to drink. It's designed to introduce me to a power greater than myself. And as a result of that relationship, I will no longer drink. It's really simple.
Yeah. Yeah, as a result.
And when we look at the 12 steps of recovery, steps 2, 3, even 4, because it's moral, all morality comes from God, 5, 6, and 7, where we ask him to remove the defects of character and humbly ask him to remove the shortcomings, then 10, 11, and 12. So at least 9 of the 12 steps are devoted to developing a power greater than myself. What makes me think that's not what the 12 steps are about? It would be absurd. It would be absurd to read 10 chapters of a book or 12 chapters of a book and there's a highlight, there's a direction of each chapter, and not come up with the same solution as to what that book is about.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about for a minute how you and I ended up meeting. What was going on? What were you doing? How'd you find us?
You know what? I appreciate your social media connection, because that's how I found you. I mean, I have a lot of time on my hands. I'm semi-retired and my wife works a lot. And so I sit around and I search on YouTube for speakers that I may or may not listen to. And so I try to find them, and I found you. And you were so responsive. I thought, what the heck? This guy said email. And so I emailed you. Within 10 minutes, you got back to me and we started to talk. And what's great about you and me is that we don't need 3 or 4 drinks to plan vacations together. We're friends automatically.
Yeah.
Because we connect on a level that is indescribable. We connect on a level that's not even human. We connect on a level that's spirit bound, that I believe that you and I becoming friends was the divine intention of God.
I concur with that. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was evident immediately.
Yeah.
You know, it was evident immediately. And that doesn't always happen. My wife and I for a while were kind of orphaned as far as like a home church to attend. Something has happened at our church that we were at for like 18 years. And unfortunately we had to make some just painful decisions, and we felt kind of orphaned, you know, but then when we landed again, we just knew. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know how the big book talks about we intuitively, you know, learned how to handle situations used to baffle us. And, you know, and that's referring to the amends phase and financial stuff. And but it's true. You come to a place, I think, in your relationship with the divine where you just know that you know. And it was like that with you and me. It was like I immediately knew that we were kindred spirits. And I think that's something that a lot of people miss by just going to a couple of meetings and going, yeah, it doesn't work.
You know, I'll tell you, you hit on something that's so important to us who have recovered. It's taking our eyes off of self. It's seeing, because it says nothing happens in God's world by mistake.
Right.
So there's a reason that's bigger than you and me, bigger than Roger, bigger than Take 12, bigger than Recovery Guy. There's a spiritual intention for our meeting. And just like when I go into a meeting, I'm in the meeting, but that's not my purpose, because that serves me. So I'll say, God, show me why I'm here, especially a meeting I haven't been to before. Mm. Show me why I'm here. Introduce me to the person that you want me to meet. when I was speaking in Southern California this past weekend, the event was Saturday afternoon, but that was just a window of time. There were real people who were seeking recovery, who were in agreement with me or wanted to learn what I know and what I've been practicing for decades. And those are the people that I was seeking out. God, where do you want me to be? Who do you want me to talk to? What, you know, where are you in this picture? And when, Monty, when I can take me out of the equation, good things are bound to happen, because that's when God and you become more important than me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll never forget. I was attending a meeting for years, and I went to my sponsor. His name was Bruce. And I said, hey, Bruce, you know what? I'm just not getting fed here anymore. And he had this laugh, this deep belly laugh. I mean, he just started busting up laughing. And he goes, what makes you think you're here to get spiritually fed? I went, well, what do you mean? He goes, your job is to see where you can be a maximum service to God and the people in this room.
Yeah,
you're not here to get fed. He goes, you know, and you know, it was like a light bulb moment. It was like I had forgotten. Sometimes we forget, don't we?
You know, we do, and that's where, you know, that's where the 12 steps come into hand. And that's where I still have a sponsor at 38 years.
Yeah.
That's where being accountable to, there was a time I was accountable to my pastor and he was my spiritual advisor. And I'm always accountable to my wife. Ask her, she'll tell
you. Right? Me too.
She's that sounding board for me. But it's always bigger than me, because I see on such a limited perspective. God sees as this amazing overview, past, present, and future. And so when I walk into a room, when I think I'm there for one reason, God invariably, when I put my eyes on him and others, shows me why I'm there, whether I'm meeting one of my new sponsees, such as Thomas. I went to a meeting I never go to, and there happened to be a young man there who was looking for a sponsor, and he came up to me after the meeting and said, I love what you say. You know, and I'd go to another meeting, or I took a sponsee down to a particular meeting 40 miles from my house. So I'm there thinking it's for this sponsee who's no longer my sponsee, and he's just gone a different direction. But there were two people there at the end of the meeting, a fellow by the name of Jason and a young lady by the name of Heather. Heather and I are now on a panel that we go into recovery centers for, and Jason is a liaison where I can send young men who are looking for recovery down to his network of recovered people. So I think I'm there for one reason. That reason is no longer in my life, but the two other reasons I was there in the first place are a big part of my
life.
And God operates on such a bigger plane. And I'm always excited to see what he has in store for a servant.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's beautiful. So, listeners, we are talking to Robert Pardon. His website is recoveryguy.org. I'd like you to write that down because I definitely want you to visit it. We have now brought him on board as part of our Recovery Podcasters Network. Yeah. If you visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the giant purple banner, Recovery Podcasters Network, you'll find his podcast there. Recoveryguy.org is his website. Tell us about recoveryguy.org.
You know, that was something that, you know, when I got 30 years sober, I tried to understand why God would take a drunk like me.
Hmm.
And why he would keep him sober so long, Monty, that I've reinvented myself.
Wow.
I'm not the same person I used to be. And that came with such a responsibility. And God essentially said, I need you on another level. Now that you have 30 years of recovery and credibility, no one can argue with your position because you're probably going to die of old age. And I started doing, a friend of mine, Jason Kramer out of New Jersey, flew him out and started to do video sessions on YouTube. I created 32 video sessions, and then that wasn't enough. And then God introduced me to a guy named Juan, who said, I can do an intro and an outro, and if you can understand Audacity, start recording. And then little by little by little, as my sense of responsibility grew, my audience and my accessibility grew as well. And I've written probably 90,000 words on my blogs and 254 podcasts and 32 videos. And it's a response to what God has done for me. And Monty, I could spend the rest of my life, and I hope to, telling God thank you by serving his people. You know, everywhere I go, there's men and women who are just dying from a treatable disease. And I don't have to tell you, I mean, you're the Monty man. You know, your whole life is dedicated to serving others, and so is Roger and others like you. And there's just, unfortunately, there's more of them than there are of us. There's more people who will die from this disease, and those of us who get well, and I do believe we get well, and that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if we can help somebody along that journey, then, you know, as it says, we try to carry this message. So I would love everyone to get clean and sober, but not everyone will. But that doesn't mean I don't try.
Yeah. What is your take on today's world of, you know, should we legalize drugs? Should we not? What about the fentanyl crisis? Is this thing out of hand? I mean, as you look at all this unfold in our world today and the normalization of some very interesting behaviors, what's your take on all that?
You know, I'm morally opposed to adding anything else whereby people will destroy their life.
It's a really good way to put it.
Alcohol is culturally and socially ingrained in our society, and that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think heroin, what they've done in Portland and other places where they've decriminalized or making things legal, psychedelics, it's like, have you ever done one of those things before? Have you ever eaten mescaline and see what it does to you, and you find it, see it's not harmless, or what the effect of marijuana has on the synapses, which in turn has an effect on neurotransmitters and how the brain fires? And is there any medical understanding, or is it all a social appeasement to a generation that wants to get high rather than face life on life's terms?
So that really is the question. Why do you want to change the way you feel? Maybe we need to really... And I'm not saying that I'm not going to tell somebody if they're an addict or not an addict, but just as a fellow human being, if somebody's listening right now, I think that is a question that you might want to ask yourself. Why do I want to change the way I feel? Don't you think?
You know, I think that's the core of the 12 steps that we practice. You know, I think the admitting that we're powerless, you know, and I'll tell you, this really came to light a lot when I was in my counseling career, because I do have a degree in alcohol and drug studies, and I've counseled in various modalities of treatment. And one of the most interesting jobs I ever had in California was when I was a DUI counselor for various programs. And you want to meet a group of people in denial. You know, they would say, now this is a second and third offender, right? And and they're not making the connection. They're still thinking it's a broken taillight. You know, or not turning their blinker on. And I said, well, I've had a broken taillight. I haven't turned my blinker on. I've been pulled over. The difference between you and me is you were drunk and I wasn't, and you went to jail and I didn't. And we don't want to make that connection, because I think one of the most necessary yet difficult things we ever did was look at ourselves and say, why do I need a chemical to change my environment when all I have to do is make choices that go against my ego? Once again, who likes to admit complete defeat? Practically no one.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the challenges with people nowadays, because, you know, alcohol is not the problem. Alcohol is not the issue. It's alcoholism. Because if alcohol was the problem, then everyone who drank would end up in AA or treatment or some sort of rehabilitation center designed to help them overcome, you know, and Father Martin has says it so beautifully. He says that alcohol is not immoral. What we did behind the alcohol, that is immoral. And I need to be willing to look at that and gauge and judge myself. Why do I need something? I do the same thing with food. Why do I need to eat this? Why do I need to eat that? I try to do in every area of life because my ultimate goal is to become well as I possibly can. Now, you and I have that responsibility because of what we represent.
Yeah.
You know, but I think every father, every husband, every son, every brother, every sister, every daughter, we have an obligation to others. And I think it comes down to putting others before us. Because it's my selfishness and self-centeredness that's always going to rationalize, minimize, and deny any condition I'm in that affects you and me on a personal level.
Wow. And so I'm thinking, of course, I'm thinking of this one couple. And as I'm thinking of them, I'm thinking that I'm not thinking about me. And I really need to turn it on me. But just for the sake of argument, let me give you this example. As I'm feeling convicted, I'm watching this gal go from tobacco to jet fuel, and when I say jet fuel, I'm talking about vaping, and back to tobacco, and back to the jet fuel, and back to tobacco, and it, you know, today I didn't smoke any tobacco. I haven't smoked any tobacco in 3 weeks. Are you still vaping? Oh yeah, I'm vaping. Which I'd almost rather people smoke tobacco than vape, because you can't reverse the popcorn lung that is caused from vaping. You can you can reverse the damage from tar and nicotine. But I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, how much does she really value her husband, who she's going to end up leaving behind, holding the bag, so to speak, when she dies from this? And so then, so as I'm thinking this, I'm thinking, because I'm on a thing now where you know, about 3.5 years ago I had a triple bypass, and that's a wake up call. And you usually not always do some of the radical things in our lives give us wake up calls, right? And we change the direction that we're going. So, I'm doing some things health wise. I'm semi-handicapped in some areas because of back and knee issues and so forth. But I'm doing some things. I've lost about 60 pounds, and I'm no longer on insulin. I'm diabetic, but I no longer take insulin. And so I'm making some life changes, but I'm still not there yet. There's still that Hostess cupcake, right? And if I stop and I think, how much do I really value this incredible woman in my life? Do I value her enough not to stick that toxin in my body so I can live a little longer and be with her? You know, it's really a question that most of us don't even think about, do we?
You know, we don't. And sometimes by the time we do, that old obsession, that old thinking, and I make excuses. Well, at least I'm not doing this. Well, at least I'm not doing that.
Right.
At least I'm not drinking. At least I'm not drugging. At least I'm not gambling. At least I'm not in a strip club, whatever. At least I'm doing the other that's going to harm me and my relationships in a different way, but at least I'm not doing that. And we justify our behavior. In a perfect example, and I'm glad you're going down this road, because cross addiction is a big deal.
Yeah.
And at 22 years sober, Monty, I ballooned to 385 pounds.
Oh, wow.
My food addiction came back. I was traveling a lot at the time, and I started getting into bad habits, but at least I wasn't drinking. At least I wasn't smoking crack. At least I wasn't blah, blah, blah. And I'm justifying every way. And I'm getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. To a point where it was becoming, my food addiction was back. I started throwing up again. And the fact that I did not drink was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. And I have pictures that people look and say, oh my God, that is not you.
Wow.
And yes, it was me. It was the untreated alcoholic who was doing other things to mask an insecurity, what was going on. So in 2010, I went to the hospital and I had gastric bypass surgery, and I began losing weight. And today I weigh 203 pounds. I'm 70 years old. I weigh 203 pounds. I'm in the best shape of my life, and I don't eat things because I never want to make an excuse that will allow me to get that way again.
Yeah.
And I've just become healthy now. You know, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection, but I'm never going to allow that excuse to be a reason why I allow myself to go unchecked and that behavior. And so we have to guard against old behaviors, old mentalities, old addictions coming back. You know, I stopped smoking on November 17th of 1993 because cigarettes were no longer consistent with the life I wanted to live. I was, you know, 7 years sober, and it was time to get rid of those. And I'd stopped throwing up, I'd stopped gambling, I'd stopped going to strip clubs, and it was no longer consistent with me. But sometimes we have to guard against those things coming back. Now, at the same time, I really wasn't working the 12 steps the way I should. I really wasn't working with other alcoholics, and I really wasn't accountable to anyone. And I allowed myself to get this way. And once again, here's what was really scary, really eye-opening. I would go to these support groups for people who had the surgery. And you know what, Monty? Many of them had gained their weight back.
I've seen that.
Face-to-face with my food disorder. And I realized that I had to apply the same steps for alcohol recovery into my food recovery as well. And I viewed food differently ever for the last 14 or 15 years. And I've been just a changed person.
That's congratulations. That is good news. That really is. I'm thinking back when my cardiologist said, things look really good. Everything went really well, but we can only do so much.
You
got to do the rest. Yeah. We can only do so much. And that's what a sponsor will say. I can only do so much. I mean, you know, God will not render us white as snow without our cooperation, right?
Yes.
You got to cooperate.
Yeah.
So let's shift gears a little bit, and let's talk about your relationship with the Creator. And here at Take 12 Recovery Radio, we can be God specific. Let's talk about God specifically, who He is for Robert.
Well, first of all, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ.
There you go.
I am a born-again Christian. I got saved at a men's retreat on March 4th of 1994. I'd been going to church quite a lot and heard a lot of preaching along the way. And I always thought I was saved. And
why did you think that? Let me ask you that.
You know, because I was a human doing, not a human being.
Mm.
And I thought if I could just do, then I would be. And I put what I did before who I was.
Oh, you dotted your I's and crossed your T's, therefore you're good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it was very similar to what I did with AA when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tell people that worked right up until I got drunk, you know?
Yeah.
So my addiction became really strong back in the 80s before I moved to Las Vegas. And I was going to Covina First Baptist Church and in the choir, practicing, rehearsing, you know, my family was known, but I was really getting into methamphetamine at that time. So I'd be up in the choir loft looking to nod out as I was drunk and on meth.
Oh, wow.
And and it was Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. So when I came in, and this was really exceptional, and I never want AA to be different. They allowed me an open door to pretend or to believe in whatever I thought was important. And I never want AA to lose their concept. Now I know it's become deeper as I would read the big book. But in the beginning, that lack of understanding led me to believe that it could be any power. It can be anything. And I tell people all the time, I don't care what you believe in. I just care that you believe. If your higher power doesn't want you to be happy, joyous, and free, at that point, we can discuss a different higher power. You know, if you're stupid, born, and glum, we probably need to discuss who your higher power is. But in the meantime, because we evolve, I have known Christ, and it's still evolving. You know, God is still showing himself real, and I'm getting out of God's way long enough to see his image and see his vision for me as he would want to be seen. But in the beginning, it was very infantile. It was very childlike. I just had to know that there was a power that wasn't me that could restore to me that power that I gave up in step one, and I'd eventually get back for his will and his glory in step 11. And my transformation as a Christian today came very foundationally as I just believed in something. You know, in the beginning, Monty, my higher power was the group because I was so tangible. And I knew something was going on with these group of men and women that I met in the rooms of AA that I wasn't sure of what they had, but I knew I wanted it. And little by little by little, my faith that I had left in the 80s started to come back to me in the 90s. And I sat under good preaching, good teaching, good instruction that sort of revealed the hole in me that would only be filled by our Savior.
Yeah. Yeah. Really well said. Really, really well said. And I truly believe that the God in the big book is the God of the Bible. But I also know that they opened it up, you know, because they had to do that. I mean, you've got to meet people where they're at. You can't elevate yourself to a place or appear to do that even and expect people to listen to what you got to say, you know. And so, you know, I came into the rooms of the 12-steppers, a born-again believer. But that's all I was. I believed. I didn't believe. You know what I'm saying? I just believed. And it wasn't until the application and implementation of those 12 disciplines and a sponsor who held me to a higher standard that I actually came to a place where I had a personal relationship with God.
Yeah.
You know, and so... Thank God it didn't matter how insignificant it's just a good thing. But I will tell you this, you know, we talk in the big book about anything is good enough to make a beginning, provided it makes sense to you. Yes. But it's a beginning. It isn't the end all be all. And I'm afraid we lose people.
Yeah. And I love the implication of the beginning. It assumes we're going somewhere.
Yeah, it's moving, right? It's action. Yeah.
And you said something in the course of what you were saying. One word stuck out to me, and you said the word listen. Mm. That is so important. Sometimes, like Saturday when I was in California speaking at this alumni event for this treatment center, I sat, this one fellow came up to me, and he just talked, and he talked. And he talked, and I just let him know his voice was okay, and he started to cry. And he called me last night, and he said, "Thank you so much for being my friend. Thank you for listening to me.
Yeah.
I've been trying to share this message, and no one has heard me."
Wow.
And sometimes all we want is to be heard.
Yeah.
We just want to know that people understand us. We just want to know that we're not alone. We just want to know that people care. And because, as my preacher would say, people don't know that you care. People won't care what you know until they know that you care.
Yeah.
And listening is caring. Because, you know, by the time we get to recovery, we're out of listeners. They're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, listening with no
everything they could tolerate, because we stopped listening to them a long time before they stopped listening to us.
Yeah, And I think listening with no agenda.
Yes.
You know,
I've told
I told my sponsees, listen, you can call me and tell me, listen, I don't want any advice. I don't want you to say anything. I just want you to listen, and then I'm going to hang up.
Yeah.
You can do that. You can do that. Yeah. And you should be able to do that. Hey, Monty, I don't really want to hear what your thoughts are. I just need you to hear me.
Yeah.
And when people know that, then they do want to know what you have to say. When they know that you won't necessarily say it just because you've got an agenda, you know.
Yeah. No, that's exciting. I go to a meeting with some of my friends every Friday night down at the Cirque Lodge down in Orem, Utah. And there's about 150 people at the meeting, probably 100 of them are newcomers.
Yeah.
And I'll stand on the side at the end of the meeting. And invariably, three or four people come up and they just talk and talk and talk. They don't know what they're talking about.
I know. It's great.
You know, and they're not talking recovery. They're talking addiction and talking their sickness. But I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to give them a platform. They're going to walk away from that experience and say, Robert cared about me. Not because of what he said, but Robert listened. You know, and that's a great thing because the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it talks about that in page 17 of There's a Solution. It says, we're a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that we may solve our common problem and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. But we share. It's not a one-way street.
Right.
We're sharing. And sometimes it's important that I let you go first.
Amen. Amen. I had the chairperson at my home group one day say, do me a favor. Wait a while before you share tonight. Because there's some new folks here, and I think we need to give them an opportunity. And then maybe what you have to share they'll be able to apply in their lives. But if you share first, there's nothing to give away because you don't know what their need is. And I thought, wow, yeah. So I started really paying attention to that and wait. I don't share every meeting, but waiting until a good three quarters of the way through, you know, to let other people. Again, that's our job as seasoned alumni or whatever you want to call us.
Yeah.
Our job now is to see if where we can be of service and help. That's our job.
And we don't know until we listen.
And we don't know until we listen.
And they're heard. You know, I'll tell you, you've really struck a chord with me because Heather and Jason and Thomas and Phil, a few individuals and myself, we go into treatment centers. And one of the things we do, as I was trained in Las Vegas, remember, folks, I got clean and sober in Las Vegas. So, you know, 24 hours a day, the lights are always on. You can get sober too anywhere. So we go into these treatment centers, as I was taught in Las Vegas on H&I panels. We go into the treatment center and we go in a few minutes early. We say hi to the folks. And then we start rounding up questions. They write anonymous questions on a piece of paper. And then Heather usually collects them. And then we put them in a basket, and after a few minutes of introduction, and usually Phil and Heather and me and Jenny or whoever's on the panel that week, we'll start pulling out the questions one by one. We share about 3 or 4 minutes each, very little of us. And then we start asking the questions. How do you stay recovered? How do you go back home? How do you go into a 7-Eleven, you know, and not drink and can you do drugs? I mean, all of these experiential questions. And we spend 40 minutes answering where they're at. And then we give 1 to 2 minute answers. That's it. Very, very simple. And we go on to the next question. And then at about 10 minutes left, after about 40 minutes of this, then we open up the floor so they can, with identification, ask a question, any question they want of any of the panelists. But it's always about them. It's always about them. Because at the end of the day, they can't have my recovery. They can have their own. They can have the same recovery path. But they can't have Monty's recovery or Roger's recovery. They have to have their own. And until they find their own way, because you know and I know that recovery is an inside job. It's influenced by the outside, but it has to be inside out. Our relationship with God, our answers, you know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things that can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Mm. They can learn from our wisdom, but it becomes their wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. Robert, I know you got to run. I want to hold on. You just hold on to you for just a couple more seconds so you can hear this song that I think you're going to love. Robert Pardon is our guest. Recoveryguide.org is the website. Please visit it. You're going to get a lot out of the podcast there, the speaking that this guy shares with you. I really would encourage you. We're very picky about who we add to our recovery podcast network. And you're not going to agree with everybody that's on there necessarily. But it's very, very well balanced. And we are just so pleased to welcome Robert Pardon as one of our Recovery Podcast Network members. Recoveryguide.org is the website. Robert, closing thoughts before we go to our song.
You know, hey, thank you very much for the link. My webmaster is going to be gone this week, but next week, when you go to my website, recoveryguide.org, we will have a link to take12radio.com. And I couldn't be more. You're the only link I have ever had.
Oh, wow.
Only link I've ever allowed because I want ownership. But I feel we're so much alike in our mission and our path. And after meeting Roger and knowing you,
yeah,
I can't think of a better person to have.
Oh, bless your heart.
Website that they can. You know, I do have a parting thought, and that's to stay.
Mm.
You know, I think the hardest thing for any newcomer, because we're afraid, you know, for many of us, recovery, the treatment center, AA, NA, whatever your A is, it's the last house on the block.
Yeah.
By the time we get to recovery, most people have gone. They've left. And in many cases, we don't have a home. And we hope and pray that that we're received, because if we're asked to leave AA or a church or what have you, we have nowhere to go. There's nobody left. There's nothing left to give. And they say, surrender. Surrender what? There's nothing left. It's a stay. You know, there's an adage, and it sounds rather trite, but it's true. You know, we'll love you until you can learn to love yourself. And just let us love you. Let us embrace you. Engage yourself into the fellowship. Make yourself available. And we have a responsibility that anyone, anywhere, reaches out their hand. I always want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I am responsible.
Yeah.
We are responsible. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Okay. You're going to love this. This is Michael Purrington and the Messengers, and it's entitled, I'm My Own God. Check this out. Here's Michael.
They had a meeting about the 11th step, talking about some deity I've never met. They say he should be in charge of my spiritual condition, but I've already made a decision to put myself in that position. I am my own higher power. I ain't got. Maybe he knows more than me about life, but I doubt it. Oh well, what the hell, I'm not gonna think about it. I am my own higher power. I am my own God. meditation and prayer. If he's anything like me, he doesn't care. I make him in my own image, so he's awfully distant. One moment he's far away, and the next instant he's non-existent.
I am my own higher power. I am my own God. I am my own higher power. I am my own God.
Time and time again I've tried so hard to pray. But our Father never lets me get my way. I prefer a lot of drama over a little bit of wisdom. In my mind, I'm better off without him than with him.
The comedic music, recovery music of Michael Purrington and The Messengers. Yeah, I was my own higher power for a very long time, and it did nothing except get me into trouble. Robert, what'd you think?
I think that was great, and I think that was very appropriate for many of us who come into recovery. We would never say we are our own higher power.
Oh no,
but we were living that life.
We were. You bet. And sometimes we could fall into that. Yeah, God, I've got this. You know, but that's why it's a daily surrender, my friends. You know, the Apostle Paul said it best, right? I must die to myself daily. Mm-hmm. Because we have a tendency to want to be in charge. Listen, I really love this show. Robert, will you come back?
I would love to. Oh, thinking of daily, today is day 13,891 in a row.
Woo! In a row. There you go. That is awesome.
Monty, I would love to come back. It would be such a privilege and honor to spend more time with you. And
yes. Definitely, we'll do that. We are definitely going to do that. Again, folks, recoveryguide.org. Write that down. As soon as you get done listening to this broadcast, go visit it and tell somebody else about it as well. All right. A very special thank you to my guest this week, Robert Pardon, and to our co-host, Roger McDermott, who is somewhere in Arizona. And for all those who contribute and support Take 12 Recovery Radio, we appreciate you so much. If you'd like to donate, we do not get paid here. This is all run by donations. If you'd like to donate to the show, there's a donate button at the bottom left of our web page at our website at take12radio.com. All right. Until our next broadcast. This is the Monty Man along with the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.